Good morning, everyone. The Mary Griffith Show is underway, brought to you by Hillbean Auto Body. Remember, if it happens to you, take it to Hillbean. And today is the first Monday of the month. That means Great River Economic Development Foundation is in the spotlight. Their director, Marcel Wagner, has joined me in the studio. Good morning.
In Hilbing's office on the way here.
Oh no! Did you have a mishap?
Oh, a deer decided he would try to run through the side of my truck.
Yes, that happens every once in a while. Yeah. Get right up on that microphone there,
yeah.
Marcel, so you're real close.
Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, we are keeping track of how many Mary Griffith Show guests are also Hilbing guests, and we want to say, don't be afraid to come on the Mary Griffith Show, but it's amazing how many people say, oh, yeah, Hilbing, they sponsor this show. I'm familiar with them. I use them. So.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they'll make it all right for you. Did the deer survive? Did it limp away?
I was coming down the street by my house. It ran out of the woods and smacked right into the side of my truck. It hit me. I did not hit him. And it stood there looking at me like, you got a lot of nerve getting in my way.
And then it went back off. Was it a buck or a doe?
It was a doe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, too bad.
Oh, well.
So, Greta, this time of year, you never really can slow down because you never know. At the end of the year, some companies may be making some shifts. They may be wanting to relocate a factory. They may be wanting to look for a place to store a product. I mean, it's always something going on. I know we just had the pop-up transportation plan study.
Yep.
Talk a little bit about what's happening in the month of December for Greta.
Well, we had a busy fall with Maker Fest and then the Tri-State Summit, and so we've recovered some in November. Now we're planning for our annual meeting, which is Wednesday, January the 8th, starting at, I think, 5 o'clock at the Oakley Center. We'll have a cocktail reception and then the business meeting in the theater. So we're working on that right now. Just trying to recap what happened the past year. I have three board members that will be that have completed their term, so we'll be honoring them and welcoming several new board members to the board. So it is a busy month for us. A lot of it's planning. For the past 6 or 8 months, the Greta board, committee of the board, has been working on reviewing our strategic plan with a much stronger focus on workforce development and talent attraction, simply bringing more people to the community. So at our meeting, we'll be talking about that new strategy that's going to be kind of a tweak to our strategic plan.
Well, they now have passed, so the city council has passed, not as much as the mayor had hoped, a 2% food and beverage tax, but a 1% food and beverage tax. And I know the mayor wants to use that money to attract people to move to Quincy and to improve infrastructure in Quincy. But because it's only half of what it was proposed to be, some of the personnel attraction will have to be chopped out of that, won't it?
Yeah, basically it's going to go for tourism and for retail attraction. And I'll talk a little bit about an initiative we're working on with there. But because it didn't get funded doesn't mean we don't have to concentrate on doing that. Attraction of talent is going to be key for us. So we're looking right now at writing some additional grants to try to help fund that. But, you know, we have companies that are interested in doing some recruiting events, and we'll be looking at how can we do some of those over the next year. So while I was glad the council passed that portion of it, I think we really need, as a community, both on the private side and the public side, to take a look at simply how do we get more people. And the mayor was right on target when he said, we just need to increase the population.
You know, the mayor is so right about that. And the only, you know, of course, Mayor Kyle Moore and I have a long history of disagreeing with each other. But the mayor is so right on that we need to get more people. But here's what I fear. And again, I'm trying not to be a negative Nelly, but he wants 45 by 2030. I'm praying we can keep 40 in 2020. Yeah. I'm on the census committee, and I'm concerned that we're going to have an underreported count and that we've actually lost more people to outside the city limits than even we are aware of. So, I mean, goodness knows, we need this initiative desperately to bring people here.
And we need to look at different markets. I mean, it's not just you know, let's attract people from Macomb or people from Northeast Missouri. We need to look at markets that are looking to relocate. I mean, for one classic example is people in Puerto Rico. They've been so hit by weather
right.
events, and it's nice with that because there's no citizenship issues. And so we're actually looking at how we could go down and do a recruiting event, do some geofencing first, and then do a recruiting event down there in partnership with some of our local businesses.
You know, I watched 60 Minutes. This probably was a rerun. I mean, I'm not trying to say I'm inventing the wheel here, but I watched 60 Minutes last night. And one of the stories they had on was how about in Seattle, Washington, people that are working, and some moms and dads both are working, and they're still living in a tent alongside the highway because of the housing stock in Seattle. This guy that they interviewed, he had a job as like a maintenance supervisor at a Hard Rock Cafe. He said he made $19.50 an hour, but he's still living in a tent. I mean, there's nothing wrong with this guy. He just can't get a house because of rent. To me, I wanted to say, dear sir, I guarantee you if you make $19.50 an hour in Quincy, Illinois, we can put you in something better than a tent.
Yeah.
They had a U.S. postal worker. She was homeless. She was living in an abandoned motorhome. I thought to myself, no, granted, you can't just pick up and... But she did say at the end of this piece, she said she was transferring with the Postal Service somewhere where it wasn't quite so expensive to live. Surely, like I said, some targeted effort at these towns where people are living in tents, I don't care how close your family is, if I'm living in a tent, Quincy looks great.
And, and that's where our approach to this has to be very holistic. It's not just, come to Quincy, we have jobs. It's almost, let's talk about why you should come to Quincy first and then employment second. You know, people want to come here because the cost of living is very good. They can find decent places to rent that are affordable on that type of salary. We have brand new schools. We have
brand new medical complexes.
Medical complexes. We have a great arts community. There's a lot to do here. And so what we need to do is really look at this holistically, and that's kind of what we've done with the livequincy.com website, is to present that picture. But now we have to figure out, okay, how do we market it to those different groups? South Florida's taking hits with weather. South Texas taking hits with weather. You know, we have the electronic capability now to go out and start geofencing those areas and promoting that so that when you get that annoying pop-up on your phone, you look at it and say, the heck is it Quincy, Illinois? But, wow, they have jobs and they have affordable living. Maybe I should take a look. And so that's got to be our approach. But there's a cost to that. And so that's what we have to figure out how to do that.
But overall, did Greta make a statement about the 1% or 2% tax? Were you in favor of it, or did you say...
Our board supported that, and we did send letters individually to each of the aldermen.
It was interesting how, you know, it was a bipartisan split, too. You couldn't tell by party affiliation who was for it and who was against it. So we'll just see now that's there. One bullet we dodged, Knapheide Manufacturing going out on strike.
Yeah, that
you know... I'm not going to ask you to comment. I mean, that would have been devastating to our economy. Loss of wages at this time of year, I don't care how much strike pay you get, that's got to be devastating. But I think anybody who read that contract and doesn't work at Knapheide Manufacturing said, can I please work at Knapheide Manufacturing?
I haven't read the specifics, so I can't
comment on that. I mean, you know, they're getting a 3% raise or a 2.5% raise every year for the next 4 years. There aren't too many places doing that.
No.
They've got a maximum on their health benefit. You know, their health premium is maxed out after 2 years. It looks like it's a pretty decent place to work. I think it always was. You know, I'm all in favor of unions getting as much as they can. But, boy, I tell you what, it's like they put cherry sauce on top of the cheesecake. But, hey, they got it, so good.
Well.
But the thing about it is, a lot of the places in Quincy now, I mean, Knapheide kind of is the leader as far as, you know, wages and benefits. This will force the others to come up to that level, or guess what? Everybody will go to work at Knapheide, right?
Yeah, there is that competition. But you've got people that are working at Titan and ADM that also do very well.
Oh,
I think they're very loyal to their company. So
absolutely.
I don't think we're going to see any
I don't think
mess.
A dollar or two an hour is going to make that much. But I'm just saying that this is in a time... labor can the tail can wag the dog here a little bit, sure, because we are so short on labor.
And I worry more about some of our smaller companies that just can't afford to match those. Maybe somebody that's, you know, paying 10 or 15% less than that, you know,
they may see some
migration.
Have you heard much from the service industry? Because they're going to get hit with that dollar an hour minimum wage hike here January 1st, which basically what that means is that on January 1st or January 2nd, whenever it goes into effect, if you've got 40 people working as, you know, line production people, all of a sudden you've got $40 an hour more, at least, in production cost. And then, of course, everybody who's been there longer than that says, well, now, wait a minute. If I was making $2 over minimum wage, I still want to make $2 over minimum wage.
Yeah, that,
you
got to
give me a 75%, a 75 cent.
Yeah, one of the organizations that I'm on, I've actually just gone off the board there, has that concern, because they have a lot of people that are making, that are going to be getting that raise, but it's what happens to the people that are now at that level, you know, can you afford to bump them up? And when you look at kind of that multiplier effect, it becomes very, very important for some of the nonprofits in town that don't have a stream of income or can't, you know, raise their prices or whatever. So, yeah, that is a concern.
Answer me this, if you will, because I count on you for some expertise. I have never owned my own means of production. I am just a mere tool in the cog here that is the Star Radio giant machine.
But you're an important tool.
An important cog, yes, but just one tiny cog. So I tend to have a pro-labor, pro-union, pro-worker mindset, having never really belonged to a union but always been a worker. To me, I don't think there's any boss out there who can say to look their employer in the eye and say, tough toenails, you're not getting a 75 cent an hour bump up. I think the morale issue would be devastating. So put me in the workforce guy now. Does he just have to suck it up, buttercup? Or can there really be people who say, ain't my problem? Because I think you're going to have morale problems.
A company I worked for years ago when I lived back east went through that exact same scenario. I mean, they were in an industry that was changing rapidly. In order for them to stay competitive, they had to retool and make huge investments in equipment, and sat down with the workforce, and it was a unionized workforce, and said, and they opened the books and said, here's where we are. We have choices to make now. We can either, you know, for the next 2 to 3 years until we buy this equipment, get it installed, we really can't afford to do anything else. And so from that perspective, but each company's different. You know, you get a lot of small businesses work on a very tight margin, and there's business owners that you know, they pay their employees first, and then whatever's left at the end of the week they get. So
I think most people want to be good to their employees. So I guess what I'm asking is, are we going to see a revolving door? Are we going to see among these service industries that pay a lot of minimum wage workers? In other words, I can work at Taco King, or I can work at Burger Queen, or I can work at Pizza Wonder, and if they don't admire my years of effort there and give me a bump up to make that differential, I'll just walk across the street to the other service industry. Will there be a shuffling here of uniforms?
That's really hard to say. You know, 2 years ago, and we're going to revisit that this year, we did an underemployment survey, and for the most part, and interviewed through our consultant about 2,500 people, there was no great push to say, okay, we have jobs that now in the manufacturing business pay substantially more than you're making. A lot of those people just said, no, we're happy where we are. I don't see a huge revolving door. I think there's an opportunity for people. If people are aggressive and they want to go out and they want to get some extra training, they want to go to a John Wood and pick up some extra training and learn a new skill or a new talent, I think there's certainly that opportunity. But people have to be motivated to do that. I don't see any huge shift in that happening.
Well, I think Bo Knapheide may remember the time I tried to weld live on the air and I caught myself on fire. So the chances I'll get hired at Knapheide under this new contract are almost zilch.
Well,
but I'm glad they got it. But, you know, you're right. I mean, you can look at a place and say, well, if I worked at ADM, I'd make this. Or if I worked at Knapheide, I'd make this. Or if I was a doctor, I'd make this. Well, yes, these are all true statements. However, not all of us want to be welders, butter makers, margarine makers, and brain surgeons. So there's got to be some, you know, somebody's got to work the other jobs. And if you like it, then that's just a portion. I'm just worried about general malaise and morale, you know, because I think you can see how that's going to affect people.
Sure.
And I just feel sorry for everybody except me. I never feel sorry for me.
Well,
poor me.
You know,
poor, pitiful me.
You know, everything works in cycles, too. You know.
Yeah, because before my lifetime's over, we'll have a labor surplus.
Yeah.
And then everybody will be wishing they had a job, and they'll look back longingly on these days when you could say, I don't really like these hours. I'll just walk across the street and get a job doing a very similar thing and maybe even make 50 cents more an hour.
Yeah.
Well, happy Christmas to you.
Hey, Merry Christmas.
And we'll look forward to getting an update on will we have our meeting before the annual meeting, our Mary Griffith Show? Will it come before the annual meeting?
Well, our annual meeting is on
January 8th, you said.
So the 6th would be that
Monday.
So I will
see you, and we will have everything we need to know.
We'll give you the inside scoop on the details of our meeting.
On the meantime, just thank your lucky stars Knapheide reached some kind of resolution.
No, I think that's
everybody in Quincy should be breathing a sigh of relief because
I think it's positive for the community.
Oh, absolutely positive
but,
for the community.
You know, again, our number one concern has to be how do we simply attract additional people to the community and how do we as a community become open and welcoming to those people no matter where they come from, because they're not going to be just like us. They're going to be people maybe with different backgrounds, with different ethnic heritages, and we really need to work on how we become warm and welcoming to everyone that wants to consider coming here.
You can't control that.
I know. We can try a little
bit.
We
can try.
Yeah.
It's 9:36. Thank you, Marcel.
Thanks, Mary. Have a great Christmas.
You too. Oh, that wonderful music means it's time for Christmas at the Mill. At the Prairie Mills Windmill in Golden, Illinois, that is. It's coming up Saturday, December 7th. And you can actually get there even before 9 o'clock and have a wonderful breakfast. But the activities begin at 9. And something brand new this year, as if all the great things from the past are back, but something brand new this year, is a gingerbread house competition. Karen Nichols has been a volunteer at the Golden Windmill for many years, and Christmas at the Mill is a big part of her family celebration. Welcome, Karen.
Thank you, Mary.
Let's talk about the gingerbread house. You can buy the store-bought stick, or you're like, here's a kit, or you can be ultra-crafty like I'm sure you will be and make your own gingerbread house from scratch. But either way, you don't have to compete against each other because you have separate, it's like the amateur and the pro, right?
There's the handcrafted or home-crafted gingerbread house, and there's also the kit gingerbread house category. So, yes, there are two categories and also two age categories.
So children versus children and adults versus adults.
Exactly.
Now, do you have to actually use gingerbread, or can you get by with graham crackers?
You can use graham crackers. You can use anything edible in building your houses.
Okay. Well, my problem is if I start to build a house, I'll eat it before I get it up to the Golden Windmill. It's my house after a tornado hit it. The roof's gone. Make the roof of red vine licorice, and the roof got torn off during a tornado. I win for most creative, right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't have to be a house. It can be a lighthouse or a windmill or a barn or any structure.
Any structure. The outhouse made of graham crackers and icing. But it's just something you're doing new because, again, anytime you have an event that's been going on now for 13 years, everybody loves it, but they want something new and exciting. So you're still going to have the Christmas tree competition, but the gingerbread house competition is something new. But they have to bring them up there and have them on display by 9 o'clock, right?
10 o'clock
for
the gingerbread houses. The Christmas trees will be collected from the schools on Friday, and they'll be judged on Friday. The gingerbread houses, they can bring on Friday afternoon, evening, or Saturday morning, and they will be judged at 10 o'clock on Saturday.
Okay, so at 10 o'clock on Saturday, they'll be judged, and then if yours falls apart or whatever, that's just the way life goes. I know one of the things that Christmas at the Mill has really excelled at is your lunch with Santa. You know, a lot of kids, the Santa in the mall, it's just too much for them. It's just too much hubbub. Christmas at the mill is a little bit more relaxed, a little bit quieter, nice Christmas music playing, but, you know, not quite such a hubbub, especially for the littlest ones. So a lot of parents do like to bring their kids to lunch with Santa. It's a little bit more easy way to ease them into, you know, the scary guy in the big red suit.
Well, and Santa will be there on Saturday. He's a very child-friendly Santa, and he will be there for photo opportunities also as well as lunch. And one of the reasons that we do lunch is that there are other activities for kids in the morning, and so you can bring your children, have lunch with them. We have vendors, and you can shop, bring your kids around to shop. And then we have Mrs. Santa and her elves who come along with Santa, and they are there to provide some activities and singing with the little kids.
After the lunch is over. I do like and respect that the Golden Windmill, because I know that's when the area, home and area education, what's that called? HCE, Home and Community Education, has their Christmas Bazaar in the morning. So folks can still go to that and still go to Christmas at the mill.
Exactly. And that's one of the reasons it's lunch rather than breakfast with Santa.
Now, what about the cost for Santa's lunch? Do we have to have a pre-reservation, and is there a charge?
For children, there is no fee. We will have lunch available for adults and others who are not participating in Santa's lunch for a minimal charge.
Okay, but actually the children can have lunch with Santa at no charge.
Exactly, and then after Santa's lunch is over, a child's lunch is $2.
So. Okay, so if you get up there and it's a little bit late and you've missed lunch with Santa, you can still see Santa, you can see Mrs. Santa and the elves, but it'll cost you $2. And then, of course, there'll be a chance for adults to have warm rolls and things in the morning, coffee, and then they can also have lunch.
Right, and we're doing soup and sandwiches and desserts, chips.
I've never had a bad meal at the Golden Windmill. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, there'll be a sing-along, and there'll just be all the great things that are happening. One of the things that I know you really enjoy, people, because it's such a German community, you still have some good traditional German cookies that the volunteers at the mill make. And the great thing about this is you can go around and buy a dozen of this kind, a dozen of this kind, and make your own assortment tray. These freeze, and they're perfectly good to thaw them out a few days before your own Christmas celebration and serve the handcrafted treats from the mill.
Absolutely. In fact, many times I'm one of the bakers, so mm-hmm. many times I bake extras, freeze them, and have them for our own home activities later on.
And what's that, Hasenfuss?
Pfeffernuss.
Pfeffernuss. Pfeffernuss is very good, so be sure you get Pfeffernuss. Where's a number we can call, Karen, if we need more information about everything that's going on at the mill?
You can either call me, which is 217-779-2943, and I do handle the vendors who are there to sell things for your Christmas stuff. And right now, we are completely full. We have 20 vendors, so I'm not looking for any new ones. But I do have other information about what's going on. And Joanne Tinhouse is 217-696-4859, and she handles the gingerbread competition as well as helps out with many of the other things. And the
What about lunch with Santa?
Lunch with Santa, you don't have to call and make
okay.
a reservation. You just have to be there.
Okay. So we'll see you at the Golden Windmill, the Prairie Mills Windmill in Golden, on Saturday, December 7th. Kicks off at 9, goes until about 3 in the afternoon, and we'll see who wins the inaugural gingerbread house building contest.
Absolutely.
It won't be me. Thank you very much. We're going to talk about model trains in just a moment. We're back. Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Get right up to that microphone there, because Dave Scharnhorst is here from the Quincy Society of Model Engineers. These are train engineers, the train guys, the choo-choo guys. And they've got their open house this coming weekend, as they do almost every year around Christmas time, at Good Samaritan Home, 2130 Harrison. Welcome.
Glad to be here.
Tell us a little bit about your enthusiasm for model trains.
Well, it's a 40-year hobby for me. Been doing it a long time, and all of that time with the Quincy Society of Model Engineers at the Good Samaritan Home, they so graciously gave us a space down there.
And it's a big space.
Yes, it is, and we've filled it up. In fact, for this show, we fill it up and another room with some additional. We'll have, I think, 3, maybe 4 other layouts that are going to come in, and the kids can run some of them, and they're easily accessible, whether you're in a wheelchair or a walker or whatever, so it's very accessible. Our regular layout room was kind of built for big kids, and it was also built when I think all of us had a little less girth, so our aisles were kind of narrow.
There's still room.
There's still plenty of room.
As the model railroad engineers age, they've noticed a tightening of some of the aisles. But the great thing about this is Good Samaritan Home lets you play there and have your club meetings there. And you have this permanent layout there that you've been working on. I mean, it continuously is undergoing some kind of upgrade. But then you also have the portable ones that people put out. Mm-hmm. So I know our good friend John Holm had a huge thing in his own basement. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the thing about this hobby is you need to come. You can't just pick up all those toys. It's not like playing dominoes where you just pick up some dominoes and go to your friend's house and play. Once you get that thing permanently installed in your basement, it's pretty much permanently installed in your basement. So if you want to go see it, you have to go to Good Samaritan Home and take a look at it.
Yes, it's been a project of mine for 40 years, and they started well before I got there. It had been a round robin club meeting, and then when we got that space, we were able to make something permanent.
Right, and that's what makes it so wonderful. So you can walk through this Saturday, December 7th, from noon to 5, and Sunday from noon to 4, and there's absolutely no admission charge. And it's absolutely wonderful for children of all ages, but I would definitely say that there are very few kids, unless they have a parent or a grandparent that's into the trains as a hobby. Kids don't get a chance to see these layouts like they used to.
Yeah, they're just not even in their own. I mean, there's just not the space. And so this becomes a different thing. And we have a lot of people, a lot of kids who are really exposed to the trains through the club. And even now with regulations and everything, they can't go over to the yards and watch them. The trains come in. It's become a kind of a segmented hobby.
Yes. You used to be able to, if you were a train buff, you could go and watch them do the trains. And now with security and everything, you can't get close to a train. So model railroad training. Is your club growing or is it graying?
It's probably graying. I know I have. it is suffered. I know a long time ago that the model railroads, they suffered because of the electric slot cars, and then the remote control airplanes. But so we've had to suffer through that, and we are suffering.
A lot of kids have a drone now.
Yeah.
So will they want to play with a train, or is there always the fascination because you can build your own town? Because when you go to Good Samaritan, you get to go through several different towns in a way. You go over a mountain and you go through a tunnel, and then mm-hmm. you're out into another town that's decorated completely differently. Mm-hmm. And all the trains can run, you know, like you might have 2 or 3 trains running simultaneously. They have to switch tracks, let the other one go by. This is something to see in operation that people don't get a chance to see.
Well, it has definitely become a lot more high tech than what it was. There's computers that are actually and chips and all kinds of electronics that help control the trains, and it's not just put it on the track and see how fast it runs till it falls off. It's a lot more technical than that at this point.
And model trains come in different sizes, and so some of the temporary displays you have up might be really small or really big depending on what you're going to be showing with the temporary display.
Mm-hmm. We have the N scale, which is pretty small, and the HO scale, which is the kind of the norm most everybody. In fact, our club layout is HO scale.
Right.
But we also will have some S scale, which is a little bit different. That's a 1/64th, and we'll have a little bit of O scale or 1/48th. So we'll have at least four different gauges.
So the O scale is kind of the bigger one for Indo. But they do have some model railroads, of course, where you can sit on them and ride around.
Yes, not it here.
Not you're not going to be showing that at Good Samaritan.
No, not this time.
Boy, I tell you what, though, if Good Samaritan wanted to welcome that aspect of your club, you could build a little train around the outside, and then you could take some tracks down the middle, and that would be a way you could go visit people in the home.
Yeah.
Just all aboard, yeah. You know. Get off at Nana's house and hop back on just like you do at the zoo.
Yeah, that's the zoo is.
The fascination for trains persists.
It does.
And it's going to persist if people come. So we want to invite people. Who should come? What kind of delightful thing in 1 minute will they see?
Oh, man. I think the animations, the lighting and just the detail, the miniature, creating a miniature world.
The miniature world and seen it all, and you can stand and walk in between it, walk around it, see underneath it, see above it, get your hands right on it with adult supervision. So bring the kids. Kids of all ages are definitely welcome. Saturday, December 7th and Sunday, December 8th. And if you're interested, of course, in joining the Model Railroad, you don't have to worry if you don't have a place in your house. That's why they have Good Samaritan Home. So you can get out of the house and your wife's not saying, please give me back my dining room table. There's been many a dining room table that we thought was put up just for the holidays and has never been back. The railroad engineers have taken it, right?
My model railroading experience started on a dining room table, and that's the truth.
And that's why, well, we won't go there. Thank you so very much, and have a great Christmas.
Thank you, Mary.